I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Okay, bro. I've been there. Okay, bro.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to the Hashtag MoEdge Podcast. Isn't it great to live in Missouri? 2016 Podcast Coast of the Year, Becky Lohman is traveling today. So, Michelle Brett, very nice enough to join us. Thank you for being the co-host this week.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We should tell folks who maybe live in a cave, or they're the foreigners coming here to work for state government, that Michelle is works on the staff of Representative Crystal Quaid in the House of Representatives of Springfield. Captain Springfield, I guess it is.
Yes.
We always have to do fresh reintroductions. We have so many folks. They're nice enough to come here from Harvard and other shitty East Coast places to work for the state now. And so we have to do constant reintroductions. But the person on the hot seat this week, kind enough to come all the way across High Street, the High Street highlight reel himself, the man that's elected more Republicans than anybody else besides Barack Obama, Jonathan Bradley. Welcome to the Hashtag MoEdge Podcast.
Oh, thank you for that kind introduction.
Well, I think it's very much in order. I want to jump right into the interesting part this week, because you're a guy that has done HRCC for how many cycles before this one?
I did 3 cycles, 6 years at HRCC.
So you caught the Big Ten wave and the Big 14 wave. You were there working with these folks.
Yeah, we went from 89 to 118 while I was there.
So to me, you're an interesting person to have on, as the topic on most people's minds now that the second very important special session is over. Weird leadership races. First of all, we know there'll be a speaker designee race. That's a veto session.
Yep.
With the floor leader race, will they do a floor leader designee?
I think there's a lot of options. Obviously, it's kind of a unique situation now that with Senator Krause resigning and Leader Sarah Boy kind of jumping in to run for that, I think it's very likely he gets the committee nomination. He's done a lot of work to get that.
Surely they couldn't screw it up bad enough not to give that to Mike, right?
You know what? Special elections can get pretty weird. Those committees can find unique ways to make a guy like Mike's job very hard. But I think it's very likely he will get, he'll end up with the nomination, and then it kind of goes in from there. So in November, obviously I don't know if the caucus wants to jump ahead and go ahead and elect a floor leader in advance of, you know, Mike actually securing and winning the general, securing the nomination, and becoming the new senator. But there's a lot of difficulty in making that decision, because we have elections coming up. We got over 44 House races, probably more, that are going to be up next time. The floor leader's a big part of that responsibility, not just in the building, but out of the building, and the responsibility with HRCC. They have to, we got to get those trains running, got to raise money. We have a special election that's happening on Tuesday that we're raising a lot of money, or they're raising a lot of money, spending a lot of money on. And so I think that floor leader's job, it's going to be difficult while having Sarah Boy running both for being floor leader and running for Senate and raising money for that. It's going to kind of put HRCC in a unique spot. So I think that's going to be part of that conversation.
So do they elect a designated veto session for floor leader, or they just elect one in November?
I think they're still having that conversation. I think there's a chance that they'll do it at veto when we elect the speaker. There's a chance they would do it at a winter caucus, which we've kind of done before.
And that would be like the one they have after the Friday after the election, right?
No, this would be in December. So this would be, it's like the first or second week. It kind of varies. We don't have a farm bureau. About first, second week of December we would do that. Or there's still a chance that they would do it right before session gets back in. You know, the difficulty of those winter caucuses is that most people are traveling. And so can you get enough people?
Michelle, you're a Democrat. You're the party of family values. You like to spend Christmas at home, right?
Absolutely.
Not at political meetings, I mean.
No, absolutely not.
Of course, the Democrats could pretty much just meet in 2 small rooms and say it was in Kansas City and do a phone-in, right?
Yeah, they possibly could.
Yeah.
You've got free conference, you don't have to pay for the conference.
but so you think, it looked to me like that it made sense to wait till after the special election in November to elect an actual floor leader. Because it's understandable that Kevin Austin's not seeking the floor leader position.
Not that I know of at the moment. It seems like he's probably out of that. I think
one of the good guys, though, right? I mean, a serious legislator.
Definitely.
You see some people run for higher office, and sometimes it's the fruits that when there's a real issue being discussed, they're not in the room. They just assume they'll vote no or whatever.
Right.
Kevin Austin's a serious person that can take on serious issues. You kind of hate. He would have been an asset, I think, to the state senate. Kind of hate to see him not be somebody that continues his career. But, you know, I think when you're within 4 or 5 blocks of High Street, you think that that's the end. I mean, people come back all the time. Senator Hageman is back after a lengthy absence. So it's a interesting, your world isn't over.
I think he wants to make sure he doesn't become a career politician. I'm not sure we figured out what that time frame is, at what point you become a career politician.
How much you want to bet in 3 years it changes to more than, it's under 5.
Yeah.
I would say that. I would bet that happens. So, leadership race on the Democrat side. Who is the floor leader in waiting? The minority of the floor leader?
I'm not sure who they have in mind yet.
So, you work for someone that's part of, I mean, honestly, the Democrats had a really solid group. There wasn't a lot of victories, but the people that came in were very good legislators. It was
a really good
group of Democrat freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
While I think everyone loved that on the Democrat Party, does that group of freshmen decide they want to put one of their class in early?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like they would like to have one of them at the table.
Or the chairman of the table?
Both. You know, either way they can get. But as far as who it's going to be, we're not sure about that yet.
So let's talk about the leadership race on the Republican side. You're working with Representative Elijah Hart.
Yes, sir.
It's Representative Rader, Representative Cornejo, and Representative Hart. Conventional wisdom would say Elijah starts off in the lead, right? He's won a leadership race before. It looked to me like Cornejo has a contingent of support. And Representative Rader, I mean, you're supported by the governor. That's a significant card to play. I wonder how that actually ends up working, but that's a different dynamic than we've seen lately.
Yeah, I think in caucus races, the caucus makes that decision, and external factors don't really matter as much. I think Elijah's out of the race is the only one, or of some of the ones running, that's either not trying to be forced by outside influences trying to jump in and play in that race, and is also, when he ran for leadership races before, he actually won, unlike some of the others in the race. So he knows that he can win. He's done a great job as pro tem. I think the rest of the caucus knows that. They know what he's doing both inside the building and outside to make sure we help elect and grow our caucus.
Let me play devil's advocate for a minute here. Southwest Missouri is notorious for never voting for the Southwest Missouri candidate. Is that going to happen this time?
Nope.
I mean, go back to Ron Richard, Alan Isaac. I mean, Alan Isaac got a ton of votes out of that 7th congressional district. They almost always fight with each other instead of vote for one of their own.
I think Elijah's done a really great job of kind of working and building their, you know, a lot of times the problem or the conflict would be is that they see each other as potential opponent down the road for
sure.
The state senate race, etc. He's obviously not taking a pass on the state senate race to run for to become speaker, so I don't think there's an issue there. Again, he's done a ton of work helping elect a lot of those men and women down there to make sure that they've won the seats they have. So I think he's obviously showing he's a great team builder, part of the caucus, is going to do a great job as our next speaker.
So it looks to me like in a House race, it's a wonderful gift. Like it's almost a curse in a Senate race to be seen as the front runner. We've seen that multiple times. It's almost in a House race, it seems like it's a terrific thing if you're seen as the person with the best chance to win. I would say Elijah started the race that way. What kind of advantage does that give you if people think you're the front runner?
Well, people like to support a winner. I say, want to jump on the bandwagon. They don't, especially if you're going to be speaker. You know, speaker has a lot of influence or control or power, and so they want to make sure that you're on the right side of that. But the bigger part is you have to travel in the state. When you have 116 members or 115 for them to go meet, you're traveling all around the state. You got to be driving from Springfield to Northeast Missouri, Northwest Missouri, down to the Boot Hill. There's not a lot of great roads to get down there. You're traveling all the time trying to get to one of these districts. You're having to, it's hardest. I would say it's easier to run for a state senate district or run for a senate leadership position because you don't have to meet that many people. Running for, I've worked with several leadership candidates in the past, and knowing the time that they've spent on the road, away from their family, so you have to be very dedicated to do it. And he's proven that he's willing to get out there, pound the pavement, not only to meet with caucus members, hear their concerns, but then go out and try to raise the resources that we need for the caucus to be successful. Because again, I can't stress enough, there are 44 House races coming up, and that's going to be part of on him to make sure that we can continue to lead the caucus beyond not just this election, but the next election.
So right now, where do you think he's at?
I would be surprised if the combined total of...
No, where do you think he'd be? Where do you think he is, hard commits that you act? I mean, leadership races are the most notorious thing for liars. If leadership races were lie detectors, they'd like to start smoking. Where do you think he really is, hard commits?
I would say that you could combine both of his opponents, and they are maybe just about hit a double digit.
I feel like there's a contingent of the caucus that does not want to support a front runner. Just reflexively, whoever it is, doesn't matter. Senator Webster come back from the dead, they wouldn't want to support it. They thought he's a front runner. I get a sense that Cornejo may be picking up some votes.
I think any member that wouldn't be supporting Representative Parr, they are pulling from this. Both Representative Rader and Representative Cornejo are pulling from the exact same group of voters. I don't think they really want Cornejo, or they really want.
But I do think that Cornejo starts out with a little bit bigger base.
I would say you maybe should look back to the poll leader race and see how big that base was.
How many people do you think, if a text message came from a senior staffer in the governor's office, that would influence him?
Not that many.
I'd say there's a dozen, if they really twisted arms.
Maybe.
Okay, I was at a thing during the first veto session, right?
Uh-huh.
The first special session.
Uh-huh.
And there was a protest the governor held outside the Capitol. And then the protesters came inside holding signs.
Mm-hmm.
I saw three members of the House of Representatives protesting alongside people holding up signs that said, "Tell the politicians to get back to work." I saw three members protesting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you search for your own dignity. I mean, good God.
Right.
Sometimes you really could run a spinal check across the House, and I think you'd be, you know, the majority side of the aisle would come up questionable. To me, if you're willing to protest yourself
right.
with the governor, you'd probably do whatever he says. Give his dog a bath, wash his car.
Right.
I think that in leadership or in our caucus, there are some that we're going to sit down with the governors, our governor, he's from our party, and we're going to stand in and support. But again, I can't stress enough, when it comes back to leadership race, that's an internal caucus conversation. That's where it should be. You know, despite how much I love reading about it in Missouri Times, I think this conversation deserves and should stay within the caucus, because that's where it doesn't matter what I think, it doesn't matter what anyone around here thinks. Caucus members are the only ones who get to make that decision, and I think they're having those one-on-one meaningful conversations.
Well, they get to make it for their own reasons, right? I mean, Jay Nixon did not get involved in a caucus race. If I recall, that would not have boded well for whatever he did on the House side. I would say, if you're willing to protest yourself for the governor, you'd probably influence it, a speaker's race, by the governor, wouldn't you say? I mean, that just stands to reason. I mean,
and I don't know how much more impact. I think I don't know how far the governor or the governor's staff are willing to go. And I think obviously they want to work with the next speaker, and that next speaker is going to be Elijah Haar, and I think they know that.
Let me ask you the question that's on Phil's mind in the Capitol that I talk to. Does the fact the governor has not supported Elijah give him license to have more, what's a podcast, right? More guts, I guess we'll say, to stand up for the House and not let it become a doormat for the governor?
Yeah, I don't know that impact goes either way. I think, obviously, as a speaker, you're going to fight for the House position. I mean, Republicans have been in control of both the House and the Senate.
Is there an issue in the governor's position and the House position anymore?
There might be at times. I mean, I think you've seen that what the House position was at one point, and then the Senate position, and went back to the House position, the governor's position kind of moved or was fluid there for a while.
That's a fair point. I've seen that. You're right.
So it adjusts. I think everyone is, you know, Republicans, we've not had a Republican governor in a while. We're getting used to what this idea is, how we don't just ignore the governor's office. I think now we're realizing we've got to work together. And we have worked together. We've got a lot of really
the Republican governor attacks you a lot more viciously than the Democratic governor ever did.
Sometimes I feel like he sees both parties, both caucuses, as one. Sometimes I feel like he doesn't see the difference.
No.
I think
you're not Republicans.
Oh, we got podcast executive producer Ben Peters chiming in. All right.
You're not Republicans or Democrats here. You're politicians.
Yeah.
And that's the rub.
Like I said, I think we're all finding ways to work together, and I think that we're going to continue to do it.
Third graders and the Navy SEAL are.
We're going to find our ways to work together.
Don't you think sometimes that, I'll just say it, no one has probably defended this legislature on TV, print, radio, mm-hmm. yelling out the back door on a podcast more than
right.
I have.
Right. I agree with that.
It gets a little bit tiresome to defend people that won't defend themselves. And you wonder where the dignity, where the...
Well, I made a career.
Just as a man, don't you get tired of somebody publicly insulting you and humiliating you?
So,
I would, personally. I mean, I'm white trash, so I guess my bar is more.
There's this... I read a book, Doris Kearns Goodwin book, about Abraham Lincoln, and he has this part where he gets stabbed in the back and bad-mouthed quite aggressively by a lot of people who ran for Congress, when he ran for state senate, when he ran for U.S. Senate. But all those people that maybe betrayed him or didn't support him, like they said they were going to or should have during all those previous campaigns, all came together. And when he was running for president, getting the nomination there in Illinois, in Chicago, or in wherever it was at the time, in 1860, everyone who had maybe not done what they should have done, he never got mad at them. He never stabbed them back in the back after they did something.
So you said after the election, he... governed and didn't continue to attack them.
After every single election that he lost, going up there, these people that were supposed to be supporting him up to 1860, when he goes in to get the nomination, all those people that had stabbed him in the back because he never badmouthed them in all those previous times, they all came in, and that's the reason he became the Republican nominee in 1860, and that's the reason he became the president.
What the hell does that have to do with this situation?
In this situation, it's the same thing. I think as a caucus,
governor's never stopped attacking the legislature.
And I think given the right amount of time, we've been able to accomplish huge things just in the last few months since he's been elected, and I think things Republicans have been fighting for years to get accomplished, we've finally been able to get them accomplished, and I think, again, both sides, both the executive branch and the legislative branch are finding ways that we can work together and really do what the voters wanted us to do when they elected us to move Missouri forward.
To the House's credit, honestly, the things they've passed are things exactly the same or very similar to they've passed previously. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they did the landmark blue alert legislation. Other than that, these are all things that they've done before.
That we needed Republican governor to sign.
The one thing you can say, I guess I'm the battered wife here, continuing to defend people, they really have passed things that have always been things they've talked about, and things they've passed identical or very, very similar pieces of legislation in the past. What do you think happens when those things run out?
I think that gets an interesting conversation. I know when Governor Blunt, before my time, but mm-hmm. when Governor Blunt was...
That's when it got interesting.
It got hard. You were there with Speaker Jetton.
And early on, it was not a problem because you were in this honeymoon period. The governor's made sure there's no honeymoon.
I'm going to be cautiously optimistic that we will find ways to continue to work together. There's new things out there we can get done, and we're going to keep working on. We have 117 Republicans, and maybe that number can grow again next cycle in the House and find ways to get more.
Prediction time. Donald Trump in the White House. Always harder when you're the party in power. Republicans have every lever of government. My life hasn't changed much, frankly, from when the socialist was in power or Bush before that. I assume it makes common sense the Democrats pick up a few seats. I mean, the Republicans actually represent Jamestown Mall, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm.
They came within a few hundred votes of representing a precinct of the city of St. Louis.
Yeah.
They represent part of the city of Kansas City proper. How many seats do the Democrats pick up this year? If the climate we go into a year from now is the climate we have right now, Democrats have to pick up seats. It's how many, right? And how many?
That is such a difficult question. I don't know. I would say maybe five, maybe.
Five's a good year. Well, that's... You're adding an eighth to your caucus, right?
Yeah.
Can you do that?
I mean, we're trying.
Legit. No, I mean, five would be a legitimate number. I mean, that's... Jonathan, you know these districts better than probably anybody in the state of Missouri. You have to be sometimes, like, smirk or, like... It's got to make you feel a little proud of your work when you look at that map and see the red creeping. Mm-hmm. Not only... We're through the suburbs, now down to the actual cities.
Yeah.
It stands to reason... Anything holding was a win last time. What's a good diet for Republicans if the climate is just like what it is right now?
I think, you know, there were in 2014, 2,000 votes that separated us from 108 and 118. And I think a very similar situation could occur next time. The greatest strength that Republicans have is we have HRCC, the House Republican Campaign Committee. We have the formula perfected. We know how to recruit great candidates. We have the right message, and we come together to raise the resources we need to win. And Democrats, time and time again, despite my, you know, biggest fears can never quite figure out how to win a race. And you, like, we get in the special election that's happening right now. We'll see how it
turns
out.
You've got to win the special election, right?
You know, specials are weird.
Could you lose that?
You can win or lose any special election.
Could
2006, Mike,
you know this district.
2006, Mike Moon's district. It's a 58% Republican district. We lost that district in 2013 when I ran that special. We won by 20 points. In 2011, I ran Christy Summers' special election. I did the modeling breakdown. I remember calling Aaron Wheeler, who was executive director at the time. I broke it down.
High-ranking federal government official, Aaron Wheeler.
I told Aaron, I was like, I know, I think we're going to win this one by 6 votes. And he said, 600? And I was like, no, 6. He's like, 60? He's like, no, really, 6. He just starts laughing, hangs up.
Half a dozen people.
We ended up winning by 40 votes. That's an extremely close election. Ever since then, Christy Summers has been perfectly safe. So, and that district was a little bit different. And this one, a similar situation. I mean, I know how to win races in Boone County, but special elections have extremely low turnout. Anything's possible. It's a completely a turnout election. I would have to give the Bernie Sanders lover, Michaela Skelton, some props in the fact that she's been able to raise $100,000, which is
I have heard Republicans nervous about the special election, whether it's the Skelton name, whether it's the odd dynamics of where Boone County is a place the president may not be as popular as he is literally everywhere else in the state. I have heard some Republicans that aren't as confident as I would assume they would be about Tuesday night. Are you hearing Democrats have some optimism?
Yes, I'm hearing that a lot of us are really optimistic. We have definitely helped Michaela in a lot of ways. My rep and Peter Meredith, you know, they're a part of the HBC committee, and they are really doing a lot of footwork, and I've met with her numerous times, and I've had the pleasure of being present too, and she's a hard worker.
Is she impressed? Tell us about her. I don't know her.
She used to work for the Senate, and now she just decided to run for office. She's a mom, she's married, and what's crazy is that the last time Representative Quaid and Peter Meredith and another LA, Cody Baker, they went to knock doors for her, and she's like getting a lot of, she's able to get the vote of a lot of Republican moms.
Is she kin to former Congressman Skelton?
I don't think so. I don't know.
I think she's an extremely distant cousin.
We call out Missouri Shirttail
Kin. But she's definitely implying that she's significantly closer.
Oh.
Well, I mean, that last name, I you know, as a person of Boot Hill, I have a lot of respect for what he did for the state. I mean, I assume that's got to help, right?
It is a turnout election. We'll see what they're able to do.
Give me the breakdown. What's the odds on winning for a Republican?
I think we win. I think it'll be a close election.
It will be closed. I mean, you just, like you said before, you just never know.
That district is not the most Republican district in Central Missouri.
It's about a 54% Republican.
Yeah, I mean, it's Republican, but it's not.
We were very surprised how many people we've had. There were, like, some people who decided to take her sign and take the other sign down.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Well, I've also seen a lot of, if you look on social media, you can see your supporters can be a little unique in the way they try to deal with signs. I saw it all last cycle
that may be more so on the Democrat side, but there's some Republicans that get a little rambunctious too.
Yeah, I've never seen them aggressively attack a sign with razor blades as much. The reason that sign was
weird,
cut up the way it was is because we've lost so many signs that we were wiring them with, you know, metal wire or wiring those on. So, because they couldn't just cut them down, they had to go with the razor blade.
Well, I'd be afraid if Ratliff was involved. He'd have some kind of outdoor camera or some crap or some movie trap.
That there are probably those things happening.
Yeah, if I heard you were in charge, that would up my cautiousness of such a thing.
There have been fewer signs since that incident, since Senator Rowden called out this kind of campaigning.
So interesting. On election night, if this is the environment, what should Republicans do in the House?
Next cycle,
you lose Mattison's seat. Maybe pick up Ben Harris's seat. Gary Cross's seat looks like a tough one to hold. What do you lose? Is two a good night? Losing two?
I think if we lost a couple, it wouldn't be over surprisingly.
Yeah.
But I also think there's been cycle after cycle. People are like, oh, Republicans are going to lose. We're going to lose, and we continue to hold or pick up again.
When Obama was in the office, did you ever really think you were going to lose seats?
In 2012, everyone kind of looks back now.
AK, yeah.
In 2012, everyone, in every other race, we lost every other race. We won lieutenant governor, but every other race, every other statewide loss, except for HRCC, which we grew seats. And I think we continue to do that cycle after cycle. HRCC has shown that we have the best operation, and that's why you can't beat us.
We'll see.
I think Tuesday will be an interesting night. I think that is a you have to tip your hat. The $100,000 is not easy for a Democrat to raise. I mean, that's legitimate, and we'll see. She runs well. You could see a new name pop up.
I'd be more impressed if she raised that, you know, raised those dollars from the district. If you look at the report, she has a ton of contributions that just happen to be from New York, Nevada, California. It's like, oh, it's impressive. You know, I think the Democrats.
You know, I always mistrust candidates that get their money from out of state too, like your governor.
I ain't saying that.
Where did he get his money from? I forget. Oh, that one guy in California. Yeah, San Francisco. I don't think we could. I mean, to me, politicians take money. They just do.
Right.
She has taken her money transparently, right, in a candidate committee. Well, kudos to her. I mean, because I think you could see Missouri go down a slippery slope, kind of taking an inner-city politician's tactics and see that black ooze seep into the rest of good God-fearing Missouri. Yeah, that is always the fear. Well, if you're from rural Missouri, you know, it is challenging to trust inner-city politicians. And then sometimes when they do things...
Especially when they quote Karl Marx.
Or when they start dark money committees, you know. I would say Michaela Skelton probably didn't want to raise taxes as much as the governor's office did in their recent report. If I had to just guess. Let's talk about the House floor leader race. To me, that I think people... It looks to me like if there's movement in the race, it's probably for Cornejo. We'll see how that goes, but probably Elijah starts as a front runner. I think folks probably feel like they could predict that outcome, or at least they know the trajectory it's on. You could frame up what's going to happen there, whether he's caught, whether there's an issue that changes the dynamic. The four-leader race to me is interesting. You have Kirk Matthews in the sophomore class running, Rob Vescovo in the same class, and Rocky Miller have the junior class. Now, my read, and it's not as good as it used to be, would be Rocky Miller has a segment of votes that's not going to move. They're for Rocky. They don't care. They've worked with him. He's there. He's built a relationship. That's what that is. Kirk has some relationship, maybe especially he waited in that senior class. Mm-hmm. That is well. Vescovo, there's a vast temperament difference between Matthews and Vescovo, and it looks like that Vescovo may be working as harder than anybody driving the state. You're working for Vescovo. How does he win? I mean, he didn't start out the front runner in this case.
I think he wins by the fact that he meets on a daily basis with 3 to 5 people. It seems like he travels around the state. I feel like I do a pretty good job putting a lot of miles on my car, traveling, working. He puts 3 times as many miles on his car. I think I've never seen a candidate work harder than he has to win a leadership election. I think it's going to pay off. You know, this election, when he started, was over a year away, and yet he's done more work, and I think that work's what's going to make it's going to be successful for him if we have an election in September or we have the election in January, December, anytime between his work ethic, the fact that he's went out there, he's pounded the ground, had those one-on-one meetings.
Am I wrong to think Rob Vescovo fares better with an incoming freshman class than an incumbent senior class, however that vote's held?
You know, initially, with the freshman class coming in, he was going to go out and be able to do the work, and he's had a lot of conversations with the new candidates that are coming in. But the same way he's been out, he's been speaking with the seniors, and as soon as this kind of started, the dynamic changed of having an earlier election, he's went out and started having those same conversations. Again, I can't stress enough.
But I mean, I thought he might do well with some candidates that are running, first-time candidates. There's a political part of him I thought might connect well.
If they have the race after the
general election, is that an advantage for him?
It definitely would have been an advantage.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But he sets down, even for the seniors now, that, you know, maybe I think, you know, Kirk, there's a little bit of an age difference between him and Vescovo, and he kind of looks better with the seniors in that category. But I don't think, you know, I've yet to talk to someone who sat down.
Well, I mean, they're very different guys, too.
Yes, most of them. And they sat down and have a one-on-one conversation with Rob. They sat down and had that conversation, and I think he secures their vote every time.
Do you see a scenario by, if they move the floor leader race back to November, by one of the candidates that doesn't win Speaker, Representative Raid or Haru, according to whoever, putting that help people coalescing around that person for a floor leader to kind of make everybody on the same ship? And
I think, I've heard from both Representative Raider and Representative Cornejo that they are not interested in being floor leader.
Interesting. So tell me, when this race started, who had the most votes of the three candidates?
I think I would still say that
I think Rocky started out with the most votes.
He maybe the most votes guaranteed on day one.
Yeah.
With
but there's a large undecided.
The caucus being undecided.
Oh, 95. I think there was a large pool of undecideds, more so than in the speaker's race, and more so than in a lot. But I thought Rocky started out with the most votes. That race has been an interesting. I think it may help other candidates that there's a speaker's race going on that takes up a lot of the conversation while that's happening.
I think most people didn't expect a Floyd to start as quick as it did. Yeah. I mean, historically, it doesn't start until next year, or aggressively like this one did. But I think, again, that's why Roscovo is in the position that he is, because he started out working. I mean, again, I work with Elijah, and I say you take all three speaker candidates, combine miles that they put on their car and time they spent meeting with voters, and Elijah's been working his butt off, but Rob's out done all three of them combined.
Let me ask you the question I think you would hear in the rotunda. Representative Vescovo runs pretty hot, which I think helps him, obviously helps him fundraising. There's a bunch of aspects of that he's been able to show as a political talent. You're leaving the full leader job from somebody in Mike Sirpoy who does not run hot, who is very even keeled. Can you moderate that? Or is that the quality that the caucus wants right now?
I think.
I mean, would you not agree? That's probably what people say.
I think
sizing it up.
When Rob first came to Jeff's city and started working, he was, you know, like I said, he's firebrand. He has a lot of energy. He wanted to go. I think as he's been here longer, I think he's not as much of a firebrand as maybe what people would have said he was initially.
Do you think that makes sense too? The more you actually see the process, the less inclined you are to be that fiery bomb thrower.
I think you have a lot of energy. You're excited. You come here. You leave, especially someone here, and you have a successful business. You've been doing that. If you're going to take that time away from both your family and your business to come to Jefferson City, you want to get things done.
Right.
And that's what the voters expect you to do. I think you came here and realized that we move sometimes very slowly in Jefferson City.
Well, the conservatives like that, though. I mean, the less the government does, the less things screw up.
Yeah, but we want to move fast to get the government out of the way. And so sometimes we move slow. The government moves slow to get out of the way.
Well, that sounds dangerous. And I come from the government. I'm here to help. I've had Republicans. The last time the people told me, we just pass this one more law and then we'll be good with Obamacare. Uh-huh. We saw that.
We don't want to pass one more law to add more regulation. We want to pass one more law to get rid of regulation, to get government out of the way.
That's what they told me. Then they passed right to work to get in the way of people.
Hey, I support right to work. So.
Yeah, no. One more regulation on business owners. It never ends. Who is as a Democrat caucus, who would be somebody that you think would be interesting to work with in that speaker's office? You look at the three people that are running.
Oh, this is hard. I would say Gina Mitten. She would be a good one.
Other Republicans, though.
Other Republicans? I don't know.
Let's talk about the full leaders race. Who's one of the full leader? I mean, you're probably going to work pretty close with the full leader anyway on amendments and things. Who is somebody that, as a Democrat, you'd feel comfortable sitting down and working with?
I know that Fitzpatrick is a good one. That's not all I can think of right now. Crystal and Peter have talked to.
There's 117 to pick from. She
right.
picked, people
but,
like Irish people. It's kind of annoying.
I don't know. This is just, it seems that he's the one that just seems to understand more. I'll put it that way.
Well, as a budget chair, you come by that almost naturally. You do spend more time in those books learning. I mean, it is a, and budget is a place where you're going to make friends on the side of the aisle, maybe more acutely than other spots. Big news in the U.S. Senate race. So you are one of the most straight-shooting people on either side of the aisle. That's why he never comes on my television show. But we have on the podcast here, the Holly thing. I am probably as cynical as they come. Holly almost had me convinced this was really some challenging, tough decision. In hindsight, you know, you want to slap yourself. Hamlet finally chose, but really Hamlet chose in February. This has been a ruse, right?
I would say that he has been running for probably a while, and I honestly don't know why it's taking him so long to get out there. Talk to a lot of people, there's a lot of speculation.
Don't you think the same are going to say the same stuff with or without the act he did?
Yep, I wouldn't disagree with that. The latter ad works whether you announce in February or you announce in August. It's the same.
So, to me, though, I'll tell you what. I have made the statement before that you could take Andrew Greitens and Holly, and it's the same person. Outside money, outside people telling them what to do and say. The different people handing them what to do. I don't think that's fair where Jason Kander's concerned. I mean, where Josh Hawley's concerned. he really came to that office and he treated it with a lot of respect. Shows up every day. You can tell a lot by the people he works with. The folks in that AG's office, by and large, have a respect for him. He's shown independence from the administration, where very few statewides have had the ability to do that or the courage to do that. You could disagree with him ideologically, but the way he's approached the job, I think he's earned some respect from people by the fact that he's treated the job. Maybe the bar is lower than it used to be, but still, yet I think Hawley has earned people's respect by the way he's been the Attorney General. I mean, I don't hear Democrats complaining about the job he does.
Right. No, we don't really have too much to say about it. Of course, there's some things, but it hasn't been a lot.
I'll throw out a prediction, though. It was a very different cycle, very different office running for Senate. You're at the top of the ballot. I will predict that Paul Kertman actually runs for Senate, which I assume that he will. Whatever the expectations are for Kertman, I assume they're low, and I'll bet you he surpasses them.
I think that Representative Kertman is actually going to do very well,
yeah,
as long as he decides to stay in it. And I think he might, despite maybe what some traditional thought is, that he might do very well against General Hawley and could very well, give a run for money, make it a very competitive race.
I guess if I say do better, what is the expectations of a Paul Kertman in that primary? Just the two of them, major candidates.
Going into it, some people would say it's very low, but some say that Kertman, Representative Kertman's probably biggest weakness is he's not been able to raise. He's not a prolific fundraiser.
Sure.
You need to be in this. Although, if you've ever been to one of his events, he can have 750 people come out to it, 1,000 people come out to it all day, grassroots donors, and is turning that energy into resources. I think if he gets the right people around him, then he can do that. I think the other part of this is there are a lot of people a lot of the grassroots members that I've talked to, before General Hawley announced that they said, we like him to do a job as Attorney General. We think he's doing a great job. We think it's really important that he keeps that job. We like him, and we want him to keep that job, and we don't want him to run for it. I've met with some of, and I worked for Senator Schaefer last cycle, full disclosure, and some of the people that, I tried to get on board to help Senator Schaefer and county captains, et cetera, they said, we really want Hawley. We love him. We think he's going to be great. Now I went back to talk to you about other races or whatever, and this race comes up, and they are very much on the side that, we can't support him in this. We want him to do the job he elected to do, and we want someone else. And then, the alternative right now is Representative Kertman. I think, they're kind of pulled from the same base, and that's where they're moving towards.
I mean, if you said that 15% would be impressive, which I think you can make a case for that, I think Paul Kertman exceeds that. I'm a little more pessimistic than you are that he could beat him. I think he's definitely a significant underdog. When you look at the money Josh Hawley brought in the state 2 years ago,
I was on the other side of it.
Yeah, it was just a mountain of dark money. I don't know where Paul Kertman gets that from, but Paul Kertman's a veteran. He's a credible candidate for Senate. And let me ask you this other thing. So Austin Peterson, I didn't know who that was. I'm not going to lie.
Still no one really does.
So I go on KMOX, and we're talking about the Senate race. And I'm telling you, people bombarded the hell out of me. You can't even understand. On Twitter, emails, why are you talking about Austin Peterson? I had no idea. He ran for Libertarian. He ran as a Libertarian for president. I am not a Libertarian person, so I had no clue who that was. He lost to the pot guy and the internet security guy. So these people are tenacious. They're all over.
I'm sure for my one comment, I'm going to get bombarded.
It's amazing. First of all, I'd just like to say kudos to you guys. Also, tweeting me after Cardinal losses is not the move. I go into a blind fit of rage and depression, so I don't care about politics in relation to the Cardinals, just so Austin Peterson people know. And tweeting me during games or after losses, that's not me. You should probably send that to someone else, because I end up with a fetal sobbing, drinking, and it's just not good. But does that hurt Kertman?
I thought
they got to pull Kertman people, right?
I thought, there was the beginning, right when the exploratory committee started for Representative Kertman. It started. I saw that the Austin Peterson people were trolling him pretty aggressively, and then it kind of over the last week or so, a couple weeks here, it started to kind of move a different direction. It's doing pretty good, I think. I think kind of he peaked, and you get the people that maybe aren't necessarily Republicans and maybe not vote Republican primary. They probably pull a Libertarian ballot, and that's what they're going to vote for. And there are his people in the Republican base, the evangelical base that's supported, that show up and always vote Republican primary. I think there's a decent chance that they're going to be that it's going to be a run for their money between Representative Kirtman, who's proven to be, you know, kind of part of the party base that led the Tea Party movement forever, and General Hawley. I think it's going to be a very interesting dynamic on our side. We Republicans in the past, we've been.
You actually think Paul Kirtman can win?
I think he needs his. The biggest weakness he's got to come up with is raising money, and I think he has the ability to go to. There's some people out there that same DC money that maybe threw some money in behind Josh Hawley can throw that same kind of money in behind Paul Kirtman.
I don't know Washington or the 501 world that well. Is if one Washington, on an AG race, it's a little different. On a Senate race, is there sometimes where one group goes with one guy, the other folks just automatically pick the other one if he's credible?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I think General Hawley last cycle pulled in a lot of more of the anti-establishment kind of DC money to some degree. I don't say anti-establishment, but just district different money, more the conservative-based money. In D.C. now, it seems like he's kind of pulling in more from the establishment, the NRSC style, with if Vice President did make the phone call, or Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell made those phone calls. That's more of one side. And what I've typically seen in the past is if the establishment goes one way, then Heritage and those other groups go the other. And so maybe that's where Kirtman's path is.
And Pergeson is somebody you would have thought would have had the stars were aligned with Roy Blunt. That Ferguson, when they were the Republican, were electing like witches out of primaries and stuff, but they never established. I always thought it was because Chuck never made him feel like he was credibly in the race. I think Kirtman goes through that threshold pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, he had what over nearly 1,000 people or more at his announcement event he just did.
So let's put the political caps on. I want to ask you: you're in the Josh Hawley for Senate room right now. He's drawing up his strategy. There's the ad you saw where he comes through and it's people climbing ladders and he says, I'm not going to be another politician climbing a ladder. In all honesty, he's been running, let's just say charitably, since 90 days after he put his hand on the Bible. What do you suggest he do to blunt that? Vote for Claire McCaskill is what I'm seeing in your face. what does he do?
I can't help but think of No, he just needs to continue to have the conversations with people and just try to remain real and as honest as he could and keep everybody in mind.
See, that's why Becky Lohman probably should be nervous flying over the country somewhere. Here's the thing, Ben. You're the executive producer. Just because Becky was the 2016 Podcast Coast of the Year does not mean she has 2017 Podcast Coast of the Year in the bag.
I think Becky's kind of doing that thing where she's resting on her laurels still.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, look, the CMO Times is very discerning in who we award Podcast Coast of the Year to. And seriously, John, you're in the room, which I assume it's possible that you could be one day in the Josh Hawley for Senate room, and you're going around the table, and they play the ladders ad. It was a good ad in the primary, very good ad.
It was.
I'm sure they weren't thinking that those stars would line up this way and they would be in this position. What does he do? What advice would you give him to do to get around what looks like blatant hypocrisy on video?
Yeah, I think you have to show, you have to clear the field. You got to be the only one. So you got to get Kirtman out off of Peterson again. Clear trolls, please leave me alone. But
they won't. They don't.
But that you have to clear the field. I don't think it matters if he's in the race or not. But you get out all legitimate.
They're not called Twitter supermodels. They're called Twitter trolls for a reason.
Yeah. Everyone else has to get out of the race. Shows that he is the only candidate. That his responsibility. He has been called upon by the party, by the base, by everyone to take on and win a seat that Republicans desperately want to win. And that we will all, despite everything else, no matter what happens in the primary, we see time and time again the Republicans, we will come together and focus as a party.
No, I'm talking about the primary. You're saying the primary,
saying.
Yeah.
So for him to do it.
You're saying Paul Kirtman's a legitimate candidate. That's one. Whether Schmidt runs, whether anybody else runs, Paul Kirtman against him. Paul Kirtman's legitimate. I agree with you there. He's going to run some variation of that ad.
In 2010, the auditor, before it was the auditor, like Tom Schweik, was going to be in that U.S. Senate race for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked it out. The Republicans, we wanted to make sure we were going to win that Senate race and hold it for Republicans. And Auditor Schweik.
Are you foreshadowing at Paul Kirtman for something else before he's done?
I'm just saying that they're Republicans. We will sit
Let's
down
and assume
your
brand X in this primary and take Josh Hawley out of it and you see this situation. What would you advise the candidate to do?
If I'm not Josh
Hawley? He'd ran the ladders. No, if you're Josh Hawley. He's ran the ladders ad. It, by I think most folks, which is Missouri horse sense, looks like a little bit he's doing the exact same thing them old boys climbing the ladders was doing. What would you advise him to do to get past it?
I clear the field. You got to clear the field. You got to be the only candidate.
And then just hope Trump's numbers maintain in the fall and you win.
And then run. I mean, you.
Let's be honest.
You move beyond that. So
Hawley's not Aiken. Neither is Kirkman.
Off-year elections are about turnout. Our base, Republican base, is going to be motivated to show up to make sure we beat Claire McCaskill. That's all we care about.
In six.
We feel like we got robbed in 12 and we're coming back with a vengeance.
In six, Claire McCaskill won her first election. It looks to me like... Look at this guy making me feel old. I have another beer in a second. If you talk about the turnout thing, don't you think the turnout seems to be tied to the president? If you don't like the president, you turn out. If you the president of your party's in, yeah, whatever. That to me, I think Claire McCaskill starts off as a favorite just because there's a Republican in the White House, and this Republican, I think it's interesting. If you look at state house races, you look at where Trump. If you look at where people that love Trump are. The Boot Heel, Jefferson County, mm-hmm. Eastern Jackson County, and you just named three of the places where there's the most swing House districts, South County, St. Louis. It's an oddity of Trump in relation to Missouri state legislative races. Places where there's swings is where Trump is more popular than a normal Republican. Places where he might be less than, there's generally not swing districts. Excuse me, but I tend to think Trump may be a little different, but he may be his own brand so much that I think we used to consider ourselves tickets, and 15% of the state voted for a Chris Coster, Donald Trump ticket. But even so, it looks to me like we swing with the nation, with the Republicans starting out with a 3 or 4 point advantage.
I think that you look in. I think first of all, you can't. You have to be afraid of what Senator McCaskill can do. She is an extremely talented Democratic politician.
Sure. Is she more talented than Greitens at being a politician? They're probably the two best politicians, I'd say.
They are both extremely effective at finding ways and connecting to voters.
If they did a political arm wrestling match, who wins?
Well, he's a Navy SEAL, so he'd win.
There you go. I tend to think, I noticed Claire McCaskill doing the thing that she does very well. She sent a thing out, 10 town halls, Eldon, Missouri, all sorts of places that were... And it's funny, you know, no one shows up and gives her grief because, I mean, the president's a Republican. So, but what it is a, she knows how to say Missouri. I remember John Ashcroft in 2000 as a young kid hanging out with Mark Richardson.
Oh, wow.
We were at two places. One was in, I think it was St. Louis. Mm-hmm. It was in West County. And John Ashcroft talked about, this is a wonderful place in Missouri. It's a great place here to be in Missouri. Uh-huh. And then he was in Poplar Bluff, and it's wonderful to be here in good old Missouri. It's the way it should mm-hmm. be. Claire McCaskill knows how to say Missouri and Missouri on a par with a John Ashcroft, I think. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, do you think anybody else gets in? I'm not asking you to betray anybody that may or may not be looking to hire Palm strategies, but if you had to guess right now, oh gosh, we've been chatting. The folks on the podcast are like, when these guys are shut up. Do you think anybody else gets in that race?
I think there is a good chance. It depends if Kirkman can't materialize and get his kind of base and momentum moving, or decides to get moved out to a different race or something else. Then I think there's still some. There's a good chance that someone else would very much consider running and jumping into that race.
So now it's time for five questions, then one on the hot seat for me. Let me pull up. We do have 2016 Seymour Times Podcast Coach of the Year, Becky Lohman, has sent in. I'm going to turn those over to Michelle. We'd like to ask you five questions about you, and then I've got one question I'm going to put you on the hot seat for.
Okay. My favorite place to eat in Jefferson City would probably be Eris's Pizza.
What do you think? What's yours?
What's yours?
My favorite, probably the green.
You ever had the tater top bowl downstairs at Spectators?
No,
it's outstanding.
I'm not sure I've ever had a tater top.
They put a little egg on it. Really good.
And then the second question is, what single quality is most important for a legislator to be successful? I think it is the ability to work across the aisle.
I think it's honesty. The only thing that matters in this business is your word. And if you betray that once, then you're dead to everybody else.
I think that is an excellent point. I think a guy that you can see that has done that well is Bill Eichel. To me, if you can sit down and tell somebody no, to me, that's a big deal. And do it without malice and without a fight. I got to go to an event for the freshman tour, maybe it was two tours ago. Mm-hmm. And somebody asked me, what do you think? What's the one thing to focus on? I go, look, you're going to have people that have helped your campaign. They sit down, do they know your kids' names, wives' names? These are very persuasive, influential people. They're paid to be so. They'll be up front with you. They're representing clients. They'll tell you what they're doing. It is very hard to listen to two compelling pitches that you don't have a deep feeling on, you didn't run on. Listen to both of those lobbyists give you a pitch, and you come down and tell one of them, I'm with the other guy. That is not an easy thing to do, and to do it without, like you said, to do it honestly, I think that is a piece of advice everybody could learn from, because I've never seen lobbyists or the legislators get mad for you telling them no. I've seen them get mad at you lying to them.
That's why I always tell when a new candidate gets elected, they say, okay, well, now I'm here, now I've got to do what your advice for me. So whatever you do, just be honest with people. They might get mad at you for a hot second, but they're always going to respect you more if you're honest with them.
That is a great...
I agree with
Michaela
that.
Michaela Skelton or Sarah Walsh, if you're listening, you should probably rewind Ratliff's last answer. Listen to that.
What's the biggest difference between running a campaign for leadership and running a general election campaign?
See, this is where Becky Bowman comes in with that 2016 podcast, Coach of the Year skills. Let's let Ratliff go with this one first. He's been down this road.
The difference between leadership and a general election? Well, it's a smaller group of votes you're working with, so I guess that if I understand the question.
And which do you like better? Doing leadership, these leadership races are actually running campaigns?
Oh, running campaigns.
Oh, the leaderships are so personal.
I don't really like primaries either. I like beating the hell out of Democrats, and so this is why.
But it's so personal, though, those primaries. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Also, have you beat somebody they're not around anymore?
We obviously did the Senate race in Boone County last year, and I talked to Weber just last week.
So. Oh, you did? Okay.
Nice guy. Big job he's got to do.
Right. Aside from necessities like water, etc., what is the one thing you couldn't go a day without? Probably the news for me. I have to know what's going on. The news, social media, I guess that's all. I guess I could say social media to sum up everything.
As a publisher of newspapers, that's a great answer. I think you're spot on with that.
Coffee in the morning and beer in the evening. if they keep me going in the morning, I drink a ton of coffee, and then the only way I'll fall asleep at night is if I drink it. Pretty much my rule of life.
Okay.
I gotta try that. I mean, yeah, I would have went Cardinals and Anheuser-Busch products.
Let's try that.
What do you like races better in, off years or presidential years?
Off years.
Do you think Missouri should change their governor's race to off years like most other states do?
It'd be more business for me, so sure, why not?
What would you think about a ban on, if you now you can't give money from LLCs, you can only give personal checks. What about only Missourians can give to Missouri campaigns? Missouri for the Missourians.
I believe that. Money is speech, and so I believe you should be able to. As long as we're not taking it outside the United States, I don't want Russians giving us any money.
Why should Californians be involved in Missouri?
Because maybe they have a business.
Not California Missourians. We love California. Burger.
Right.
The Burger House in California is great, but why should people in New York City be involved in our races? Why don't they deal with their own stuff?
Because maybe it's a family member who lives in California,
right,
and their sister or brother, mom and dad, somebody's running for state rep or something.
All right, what about, blood kin, that's it.
Maybe it's a family friend. You went to high school together. They support you. They know you're going to do great things, and they want to support you and be successful.
Yeah, I've actually had conversations with people.
One of my best friends just moved to Miami.
Well, why don't they write him a nice note or something? I mean, do you really? I kind of don't trust folks that hate Missourians. What about a one-year ban on, you have to live in Missouri 1 year before you can run a state department?
Sure.
I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
I mean, have we really found a bunch of talent coming out of some Ivy League crap coming over here? I mean, honestly, I have not seen it. Governor Blunt had some great department directors. I mean, I remember Mike Keithley, wow, talented guy from Bernie, Missouri, down the boot heel.
One could make the argument that it's a Missouri job, should have Missouri. The flip side of that, the flip side of that is taxpayers, you know, maybe they just want to have the best person in that position.
Yeah, but do you think Illinois people are better than Missouri people?
Well, of course not Illinois.
Me neither.
Maybe another state.
I definitely think you should.
Well, we can make a permanent ban on anybody from Kansas having any job in Missouri. I can support that.
There you go. You run that on out the Pacific Ocean. I think you're fine. I want to thank everybody for coming here, especially our sponsors, Republic Services, the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. I always have to thank executive producer Ben Peters. Next week, Rachel Hearn will be back, so you'll be able to, I'm sure the conversation will be far more enlightened and far more intellectual. I always want to thank Becky Loeb. I hope she has safe travels as she jet sets across the country. Hope when, by the time she hears, I hope her travels are safe. Michelle Britt, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
In Crystal Quaid's office, you filled in for Becky quite admirably. I think she should be looking over her shoulder a little bit.
Oh, thanks.
Somewhere in the air right now, there's probably like something hitting her head that's like, oh, what's going on? Something's not right.
That moment where she's like, something's going on.
Yeah.
Aww. She's just looking around going,
Michelle, I got to be after her. Yeah. John and Ralph, when I saw you on the sidewalk the other day, I talking politics with you is outstanding. You've been a very good friend to me, and I very much appreciate doing this. I have actually got to do a podcast where I learn things, which is always interesting. There is nobody that knows these districts better than you. Thank you very much for sharing some time with us.
Thanks for having me.
And more than anything, thank you. God love the Cardinals. Hopefully they get back above 500. It will cut down on my drinking if they did. Get a shout out to Senator Sylvie's new chief of staff, Hannah Beers. Big doings. I think she's an excellent fit there for a very busy legislative office. Can we call him the chairman of the Courage Caucus?
I think so.
I think he might be the chairman of the Courage Caucus. From downtown High Street, we will see you next week on the Hashtag Mullet Podcast.